Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us as we come your way every week at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We're also rebroadcast on a2zen.fm at 3 p.m. Pacific time on Sundays, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show page, and all of our interviews there. We have links to their websites, and today is no exception, and we're excited to have as a returning guest someone who I've always enjoyed talking with, and he has a special guest with him who is actually the co-author of a book that the two of them have written. It is called Solomon Speaks, Reconnecting Your Life. Eric Pearl, Dr. Eric Pearl, and Frederick Ponsalve, thank you so much, both of you, for joining us on the program. This is fantastic.
Well, it's wonderful to be here with you again, Richard. I always enjoy your interviews and spending time together.
And I want to welcome you, Frederick, to our program as well. You are obviously new to what we're doing here. And as I like to tell our folks, you know, this program is designed around new paradigms for a new world and giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. And you have a new perspective on how to reconnect, not only to tap into, create, utilize, monitor, manage, and go with the flow, which seems to be really a big these days, and even more so, and going with the flow of the unlimited, expansive power of the universal energy. I have to say to the both of you that prior to this interview, I've had a couple of unusual, I'm going to say just experiences, with individuals who seemed as though the energy that they were tapped into was one that I didn't want to have anything to do with. Maybe the word to describe is altercations is what they were interested in, not what my life is about. And so I just kind of backed away.
These are the people who like to talk about doom and gloom in their predictions and things?
Among others, I've even had situations in restaurants or stores where I may have either, they may have thought I said something, I made a derogatory comment, those kinds of things, looked at them the wrong way, and the next thing you know, they're in your face. And they're saying, who do you think you are doing that? I didn't do anything. And it's as though people are sometimes imagining things that are going on, feeling as though they're the victim, as if they want this aggressive energy to accelerate. Do you find that on the periphery of what you're dealing with?
Well, I do at times, very, very, very infrequently, less frequently as time goes on. I know that as we step more into our own consciousness of love, that happens less and less and less. Howsoever, you know, a lot of people are in their own egos, in their own interpretations. They interpret things from things that have happened to them early in life, their own issues with feeling abused or abandoned or otherwise, you know, not treated appropriately. And many people have buttons that are really sticking out there and are unintentionally triggered.
Yeah.
And we have to be responsible for ourselves. All we can do is really emit love, even in the interaction when they're being aggressive towards us at times. Fred, do you have experience with this?
Well, I don't know per se exactly that, but I can tell you, I think that I think the only thing that you can control, certainly in a reaction, an interaction like that, is your response. I mean, that's the only thing you can control. And when I have had experiences with that in the past, I really just sort of step back and try not to get emotionally involved with it and recognize that they're working out some sort of thing in their life. They could have just possibly just had a really bad day, and they need to inflict it on somebody. I just don't. I try not to internalize that.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to stay. And I also, you know, check myself and go, all right, there's a little angst. You know, for me, the environment is really a reflection wherever I'm at emotionally.
Right.
And if I run into a lot of anger in any given day, I sort of reflect and go, are you holding on to any anger? It's a great way for me to question just where I'm at in it.
Right. Go ahead.
No.
I was going to say, well, this ties into basically the direction I wanted to go in light of this wonderful new book called Solomon Speaks, Reconnecting Your Life, because it just seems as though there are a lot of folks, and even though the reconnection, as you and I, Eric, have talked over the years, it's interesting to even say years, but it's nice to have known you, I mean, at least 13 years, 12 or 13, maybe 14 years, dealing at one level with health and well-being. But even the well-being aspect and a lot of the folks that we're talking about who are experiencing this, they're not connected. They have severed that connection for whatever reason or lost the connection, however we want to phrase it. And we're here to talk about, of course, reconnecting your life. And I'd like to find out from Frederick, because from what I have read, you are the initial, shall we say, catalyst, if that's the right term, for...
I don't think there is a right term.
Okay. Well, then I'll use that one just the same. But nonetheless, for what we now have between the covers of Solomon Speaks.
I would say conduit.
Conduit. Better word.
I think the catalyst is something much larger than Fred or than me or than any. I think the catalyst is the blending, the coming together of the evolution of the universe and the consciousness of this voice, Solomon, coming through. And Fred brings this through so beautifully, like a conduit, delivering the exquisite prose of Solomon. Do you agree with that, Fred?
Do I agree it's exquisite?
Well, I meant with the conduit description.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, I don't pretend to understand it anymore from the first time it happened until today. I mean, I just know this thing happens, and, you know, I try to get out of the way.
Yeah.
The only thing I can explain.
Takes me to a good initial question for you, Fred. How did this happen to you?
Well, actually, it started many, many, many long time ago in a distant planet far away. No, it actually started tangibly at the Colorado Shakespeare Festival. I mean, as a kid, I always knew there was something different. I mean, I was sort of psychic. I was, you know, I would think of something and then it would happen. And I never talked about it to anybody because, as a farm boy in Wisconsin, there's no frame of reference for that. You know, especially in the late 50s, early 60s, there wasn't. Anyway, long story short, I get a job at the Colorado Shakespeare Festival, and it's the summer of TM, where everybody's doing TM, 77, somewhere in there, 75. And, of course, I didn't have the money to enroll in TM, so I, you know, co-opted OM. I thought that was something that you could possibly chant or whatever. So I was oming away on the lawn in the morning one day, and I was hoping, I didn't know what was going to happen, you know. And I asked myself a question, you know, just breezily, and this answer came. And it wasn't me talking. And I asked another question in regard to the answer, and then another answer came, and another question. And pretty soon I was having a conversation with myself, and I thought, well, great, now you're schizophrenic. I mean... Now what are you going to do? So I sat on that, and the voice would, and I was also doing automatic writing, and sometimes things would come through automatic writing. I'd be writing, you know, my and something, and suddenly my hand would go off and start writing something else. So, I mean, I kept all of that really to myself, and it wasn't until just prior to me meeting Eric that it became overwhelming. I mean, it was like I was with a friend, and suddenly I was hard to stay awake. It was very hard for me to stay awake. And I said to her, I have no idea what this is. I have no clue, but I think I'm going to disappear for a while. And this voice came through, using my voice, using my hands. And then I sort of woke up like 10, 15 minutes later. And that exact same thing happened. I had won like three chiropractic sessions with Eric when he was a chiropractor, and I had never been to a chiropractor. I had no idea what they did, but I thought, well, it's California, it's an experience. And as soon as I got into the office, this exact same thing started happening, where I was really fighting to stay awake. And, I had never met the guy before. So I was thinking, oh, God, you cannot do this to a total stranger. And the second visit was even harder. And I said afterwards, I said, look, I have no idea what's going on here. And Eric suggested maybe I should just, see what happens, let it go. And I did. And the result is this book. I mean, we had continued to have sessions after that first time Solomon, well, at that time Aaron came through. And I initially was very freaked out by it. But now I've, over the years, and have, channeled for other people as well, that I really trust the message. My initial fear was that it would be, who knows what this character was going to be saying. I have no clue, and I don't even remember it. So there's no way, I could hear what he was saying to somebody because I'm not really there. So I felt incredibly responsible, and it wasn't until Eric really made the case of, this is information that needs to get out. And even then I was hesitant, But, it seems the book has been out for a while now, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive. And I just got a letter the other day from some woman who, said, it really changed her in a really deep way. And I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled that that's how people are responding to the material. So that's the story.
Richard, we feel a responsibility sometimes for, of course, what we do and what we bring through. And Fred is a very conscientious person, and he was a little concerned with what is this voice saying, because he couldn't really hear or listen to the message while it was happening. I remember, Fred, when I asked you one time, do you hear, are you aware of what's being said? And the way you described it to me was, I hear the first three words, and by the time I get to the fourth word, I've forgotten what the first one is, not really remembering what it's saying. And, Fred was worried, is this voice going to say, everyone, grab arms and overthrow the government? Or he didn't know what it was going to say. But after a while, he became more trusting of the beauty of the message. It was easier for me to trust the beauty of the message because I was hearing them live as they were coming in. And also, the reality is it's not so easy for Fred to distance himself from it, because from the outside, it looks as if it's Fred talking. But if we can view this a little more objectively, really, Fred's the telephone, and the telephone can't be responsible for the message that comes through it. What the telephone is responsible to do is to deliver the message as clearly and beautifully and purely as possible.
Right.
And that's what Fred has become so much more expert in allowing himself to do with time.
Absolutely. And I have to say, too, that unfortunately there are times when the telephone does end up getting the brunt of a person's expression of what message they may have heard. Well, that is not going to be the case here. Fred is perfectly safe and sound where he is. But what I am so taken by is the fact that, and I talk with folks about this on occasion, in this country, our Constitution, the preamble basically speaks of the right to life and the right to liberty. However, it does not give us the right to happiness. It does give us, however, the right to pursue it. And I find that fascinating in the context of a word that I'm starting to incorporate into my vocabulary as to the way in which I want to live my life that you folks use in your materials, and I'm sure throughout Solomon Speaks, and that is about not surviving life, not just living life, but thriving, exuberantly, thriving. Talk about that.
Fred, would you like to?
I was waiting for you to jump in. Well, I tell you, all you got is the moment. That's all you really have. And I think if Solomon's message is anything, is, we're put on this earth to experience joy. We're not here to be punished. We're not here to pay off horrible sins. We're not here to go through. I think a lot of times people, and you can stop me at any point, I think a lot of times people think that they have to pay for their happiness, that I have to struggle, 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 and then at some point, then I'll be entitled to be happy. And we, you know, undergo a lot of stuff, and I know it's suffering, but at the other end of it, and Solomon's message really about that is, you know, no, you can be as happy as you're ever, ever going to be today, if you choose that, if that's a choice you want to make. It isn't contingent upon years of crawling through gravel to get to it. And I think that's kind of revolutionary in terms of, you know, the way we look at happiness, the way we deem ourselves to be happy. Now, of course, he's talking about a happiness that comes from within.
Sure.
That isn't, you know, isn't based on a bigger car, isn't based on the better job, isn't based. But that happiness that comes from within is unending if you learn how to tap it.
Unending. Right.
And I mean, it isn't going to, you're not going to run out of it. You're not going to use it all up.
Yeah.
It's there forever.
An infinite supply.
And I think it's our goal here with all these different kind of modalities that people are trying is to try to carve a path to that pool of an indestructible happiness that already exists. It already is there.
Now, you know, if I can interject a little bit.
Sure.
Fred always knows that periodically I like to quote a little bit of Solomon on the subject you're talking about. You know, part of what Solomon says, I'm going to share a little bit, is he says, now some people might characterize heaven as joy, but it's really in our process where joy unfolds. One of the things that Solomon discusses is that we are here to learn how to enjoy the process, not how to go for the end result, but to be in the process. He says it's only in the process where joy unfolds. In activity, in doing, in giving yourself a task and an assignment, taking on the challenge of exploring your nature to accomplish that is the joy of this existence. It is allowing the best part of yourself to surface, and you realize the vast knowledge you possess to create the most value in this plane in any given life. In the process, you are thrown many kinds of barriers to your going forward, and the excitement is in being able to climb over the barriers and see the other side. That is where the joy lives.
Mm. Now, Eric, when you were presented with the writings, the dialogue, if you will, of Solomon, I mean, I've known you long enough that I can guess at your reaction, but tell us, what was your response?
When I first heard it and when we were talking about writing it?
When you first heard it.
Awe, in a singular three-letter word, A-W-E, awe. And because I knew I was standing in the presence of something great and wondrous. And there's something very fascinating about the word awe, about the experience of awe, because awe is when you're standing in the presence of something heretofore unknown or unfamiliar to us. And we know the concepts of there's nothing to fear but the unknown, or, you know, fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, when you are in awe, it's something great and wondrous, and you have the choice, the option, to interpret it as being wonderful or being frightening. I remember growing up watching the old westerns on television once in a while. There'd always be, you know, the parson would come out from the little church and talk about his flock of God-fearing Christians. And God-fearing was a phrase that never, ever made any sense to me. What kind of God would want us to be in fear? It made no sense. It wasn't the way I was raised personally. And many, many, many years later, not too long ago, I was giving a presentation in Sfat, which is the cradle of Kabbalah. And I was there with one of the head rabbis, and we were talking, and we were discussing different things, and I brought up this concept of God-fearing. I said, where does that interpretation or translation come from in the Bible? And the rabbi explained to me, he said, if you look at the original word in Hebrew, the word is Nora, N-O-R-A-H, he said, on its most base level, it can be used as terrible or fear. But it was a misinterpretation, a mistranslation, because on the highest level at which it was being used, it is really a state of awe. So I remember one time that Deepak Chopra was talking about insults and compliments. And he said, I could pay you an insult or I could pay you a compliment. And you can choose with either to feel insulted or to feel complimented. And Solomon once said, it is only a few that dare to open their eyes. And often those who do are blinded by what they see. And we have to understand that light itself is neutral. Mm-hmm. We choose whether to allow the light to enlighten or to blind. We choose whether to be insulted or to feel complimented. We choose in a state of not knowing of that wonder to feel fear or to feel the splendor of the concept of awe.
And when you use the metaphor of light, even in the literal context, one of the things that I came to the realization is that light itself, the essence that is light, cannot be, if you will, polluted. It can be blocked in terms of casting shadows, but not polluted.
That's true.
And that's one of the most amazing things to me when I have been reading, especially passages, say, from the Bible, where speaking of making the comparisons between God and light and the light of love and so on and so forth, is like, that's pure. That cannot be tainted in any way, shape, or form, except by our perceptions in terms of the things that we throw up in front of it to block it from getting to us.
Well, I think that's absolutely valid. I mean, I think, you know, we were talking at one point about evil in one interview, and I thought, you know, it really is just the absence of light. That's all it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without the light, then we get to these dark places, you know. And I think the big message with Solomon is that we're empowered to choose the light. And it's all about empowerment. It really is about, you know, he doesn't give you answers that you haven't maybe already heard somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But he really allows you to understand that you have the choice. It is your choice whether or not you... He has a whole thing about walking through doors, you know, people wondering, you know, deciding about change or not change and, you know, contemplating doors, walking, watching people walk through doors, see which kind of people walk through, whatever. You know, and his whole thing is move. Walk through a door. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You know, the light will be there on the other side if you move. The horrific state to be in is in stasis. You know, where you're just inert.
Yeah.
And the thing is, learn how to move. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Well,
just
you know,
take a step forward and move through any door that presents itself.
Well, when I was working in the first 15 years of my career, I was working for a Christian radio station, Frederick, and it was the greatest education I was ever paid for. And one of the analogies that I came up with to what you're speaking to, I kept hearing various individuals saying that they just wanted to do God's will and God will provide and so on and so forth. And the image came into my mind of two rooms joined by a door. In one room was a chair, and this individual was sitting in the chair speaking these words, I just want to do God's will, God will provide, etc., etc. In the other room was that which they wanted. And they sat in that chair uttering those words, and nothing was happening.
Yep.
And I said, and nothing's going to happen until you get up out of that chair and walk through that door.
Exactly.
So, Richard, actually, you know, what you're talking about is so true, and it's really conveyed, and I hope we don't take this as a digression, but there's a wonderful joke, which really, if we look at what's behind this joke, we see...
I hear it coming.
It is coming, and I'll try and keep it brief. But the story of a man living in a house when a flood comes, and the floodwaters are coming, and a truck comes by and says, come in, I'll take you to safety. And the man says, no, God will provide. The water levels get higher. And a boat comes by, and while the man's in the top floor bedroom window and says, come in, I will take you to safety. And the man says, no, God will take care of me. And then he's on the roof, and a helicopter comes by, drops a ladder, says, climb up, we'll take you to safety. He says, no, God will take care of me. And the floodwaters come up, and the man drowns. He shows up in heaven, and he's presented to God, and he says, God, I thought you'll take care of me. He said, look, I sent you a truck, I sent you a boat, I sent you a helicopter, what more do you want? and it's funny, but the truth is, at some point or other, it's our responsibility to participate, to take hold. It's like God helps those who help themselves. God is here, God loving the universe to help us, but we must choose to interact.
Yeah. I have to say, you've uttered, back in those days, for me, that was a dirty word, the word responsibility, because it was either God or the devil. And none of that made any sense to me, because then it's like, well, then where's the whole free will and ability to choose that you speak of so highly, you know? And that was what always kind of drove me to continue to seek and find and search and question. And we're gonna have more questions for both of you, but we're gonna take our short break here, and we're gonna talk more about Solomon Speaks on reconnecting your life. I have as my guests here on the program Dr. Eric Pearl and co-author Frederick Panslov, and we are going to take a break here on Tell Me Your Story: New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true.
Tell me your stories.
And understanding is what it is all about, and we are all trying to understand what is being said at any given time throughout our lives in the moments that present themselves, especially those moments that we may not perceive as being profound epiphanies, if you will. We're in my perspective, that is what this particular program is about, some epiphanies. I'm going to share with you a website. You can find out more about Solomon Speaks by going to the website, coincidentally, SolomonSpeaks.com. That's SolomonSpeaks.com. And of course, this is Solomon Speaks on reconnecting your life. And my guests are the co-authors, Dr. Eric Pearl and Frederick Panslov. And I want to welcome you back to the program as we continue talking about this whole aspect. I'm curious as to whether either of you asked the question, and if it was even possible to pose questions in this context of this information being delivered. Why Solomon?
Well, I'll just jump in here, and then Eric can certainly add to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really sort of, you know, we were like, what is it, what is it, what is it, you know? And initially there was this voice that came through that was, we dubbed Aaron. And he was sort of like a jolly Santa Claus kind of character. And eventually Aaron said, you know, I'm moving on, but somebody's coming to take my place. And he'll be just as open to you as you want him to be. And we sort of dubbed him Solomon. I mean, it isn't like he said, I'm Solomon so-and-so, and here I am for you. You know, it was just for convenience that we attributed that name. It just came.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Really, these entities don't have names where they come from. When we were speaking with the first voice that came through, Fred, and they would say, I don't have names. And I would say, well, that's fine. But after a while, it became rather tedious to, you know, Richard. It's easy to say Richard, and
right.
Everyone knows I'm speaking to you, but it became tedious to say that voice that speaks through Fred. And so at a certain point, I finally said this to the first voice. I said, you know, I realize you don't have names. I said, but it's just tedious to say that voice that comes through Fred. Can we call you something?
Yeah.
Aaron. And Aaron came out of my mouth, the word. And the voice finally, maybe out of a little frustration or just benevolence to me, finally said, you know what? I don't care if you call me Helen. And so we called the first voice Aaron, and at a certain point in time, we got a sense that the second voice was coming through, and because of a series of events, Fred and I both on our own independently came up with the name Solomon, so we decided we would call that voice Solomon, and both of them were there for a while, and then Aaron left, and it was left as if Aaron will at some point return, but that was, you know, that was a more than 15 years ago, and Aaron hasn't come back as of yet. And since most of the information came through Solomon, not to confuse people, we just call these the Solomon teachings. But there's really an entity of intelligence that has more than one voice to it, and more than one intelligence that comprises it. And right now, the information is coming through the Solomon intelligence.
Right. Well, this is incredible information that is certainly obviously available to all of us through the book Solomon Speaks, that is available through the various websites, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and so forth, as well as the website, SolomonSpeaks.com, TheReconnection.com, FrederickPonslov.com. I'm curious, Frederick, if I might ask you about your personal, how has this experience affected you and your personality?
Well, you know, I don't, it's kind of weird to say, it really hasn't affected my personality until like the last 3 weeks since the book is out. excuse me, because, you know, I have channeled for groups over the years, you know, and it's people who have found me, you know, people who are in stress or people, whatever, you know, and they found me, and it seemed to be very organic. It was not, you know, advertised. It wasn't. And then, you know, I was like really nervous sort of about the book coming out because I've been a closet channeler for a while. And, you know, my family didn't know. I mean, for whatever reason, I have one older brother. And strangely enough, the book came out, and I had to send a copy to my brother because I wanted to get him to get it for me. And he's, you know, 75. He was a Republican his whole life, you know, sold factories around the world. And I was really nervous about his reaction to this book because I didn't tell him anything. I said, here's the book, read it, see what you think. And, I mean, he called me back and was just thrilled with the book.
Wow.
And I was like in shock. I was in total shock because he you know, he isn't New Age. He isn't, you know, a spiritual thinker. And he so responded to the material. And that was so encouraging to me because I think because the material is so truthful and so honest, it resonates with everybody that reads it. I mean, even when Eric and I were working on it, I mean, we had days where it was a grind, you know, and arguments and what should be put in and what shouldn't be. We all had very strong viewpoints. But every single day after we worked on it, I always walked away feeling so much better, just physically better, you know. So I think, you know, there's something about the words on the page, you know, and they say a certain thing. And there's something about the resonance of it. And I'm curious to see as we get feedback from people as they read it, what their experiences of, you know, of the other end of it, you know, how they feel after they're reading it. Because I think there's something there as well. And the early feedback has sort of been confirming that.
Richard?
Yes.
Sorry,
go ahead, Eric.
I was going to say, you know, I sent this to, of course, this is a Hay House book, Solomon Speaks on Reconnecting Your Life. I sent this to the head editor of Hay House, who has read all of their books over the past 20-some years. And after going through this book, she sent me back a one-sentence email. She said, or two sentences, thank you for sending me this book. My life has been forever changed. And, you know, Richard, what I'm thinking is, because Fred talks about the energy that's communicated, not just the words, but it's much larger. Since this is a voice interview, would you like it if I shared with you maybe a paragraph or two from the book?
I would, absolutely. And before you do that, I will add to what Frederick was saying, that we use as a disclaimer, but it's always at the end of the program, and I do that intentionally. And the disclaimer is this, that if you've listened to this program, it's too late. You have already heard the program. You've already heard the content, and now you're going to have to deal with it. Maybe not today or tomorrow, but somewhere in your life, something's going to happen that is going to bring this information to your remembrance, and you're going to start to deal with it. That's why it's so important to be careful what you listen to and what you watch and what you read and who you surround yourselves with. And
because it changes your life.
It can change your life in a way that you don't want, and that's why you have to be conscious and aware in that respect. And to that, I will let you, Eric Pearl, share with us from Solomon Speaks.
Well, and I'm going to add to that statement. I don't know that it can change your life in a way that you don't want, but it may very well change your life in a way that you're not sure you are ready for as of yet. But if you step back and look, you will see the perfection and the beauty in it.
Good point.
So so give me about 60 to 90 seconds at most here.
You've got more than that. Go right ahead.
Your heart is coming here to understand a deeper sense of your truth. You need to recognize your heart is in the space that is allowing you to illustrate your greater being. Your feelings now are being carried through on a different plane, and your energy exists in this sphere of influence that is central to your understanding of a different sphere of influence. There is a lot that needs to be said in various ways. We understand ourselves in a limited fashion, and we need to carry this understanding as a life process. It is the unveiling of a multifaceted force within our lives. We need to peel away the exterior so that that internal being shines through to those with whom we interact. This eternal soul that resides within our framework is being covered up in many ways by our fears, our apprehensions. And in your work, and Richard, you know, this is interpreted by many people. This book that Solomon Speaks is to make us better healers, but it's to allow for our own healing in whatever form or life capacity we are in, whether we are becoming healers or whether we are just on our own path with our own healing and evolution. So it says, and in your work, that is what you need to do. You need to unveil your soul. It is not a simple process, and this stripping away of ego is an eternal process. This selflessness that must shine through the being that can reach in without interference. Once that pure force shines through, without it being refracted by various mindsets, it will flow in a more direct manner. Once you allow your soul, that egoless purity, to come through, that is almost a common denominator in that it has the ability to automatically fuse with the frequency of the person you're coming in contact with. So your job in this process is to strip away the defense, strip away the mind, strip away the techniques and control mechanisms that you have in this plane. Let them go. Let them be a part of an exterior that has nothing to do with you, and present that soul in the room. It will automatically do the work. That energy is the common universal language of the cosmos. It is understood immediately and is felt intrinsically.
That brings to mind, Eric and Frederick, a concept that I concluded many years ago that came back to mind when I started hearing the news stories about people listening to people. That's as far as I'll take that. And it was this. If God already knows everything about my life, including those secrets, those things that you read there just a moment ago, that we need to unveil the soul and so forth— if God already knows, then what difference does it make if the other 7 billion people on the planet know? Most of them aren't going to care anyway, and it's only going to do me good to get it out because God already knows. The universal mind already knows this stuff. But if I don't get it out of myself, it's only going to continue to hurt me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there's Solomon, in his simplicity in many ways, is really just a reminder.
Yeah.
It's just a reminder of the power that we all have and the power to step in, you know, to step into a space where we feel, you know, vulnerable and powerful all at the same time. And I think you have to have a certain sort of vulnerability to empathize with any situation that's coming your way. And I think Solomon reminds us of that. He's like, you know, he says, you already have all the answers. You already have all the answers. I'm just telling you, there's a way to get to them.
Right.
But you already contain them. You know, to look outside yourself for answers. Oh, this answer works for this person. I'll try that for a while. Oh, this answer, you know, no. You know, everybody's answers are tailor-made to their past lives experience.
Mm.
And I think the more that we can tap into that and be trust, you know, he spends a great deal of time talking about instinct and learning to trust your instinct. And he at one point says instinct is the sum total of all your life's experience. It is an internal compass, you know. And the more that we turn the volume up of that instinct, the more we can trust who we are and trust that we are doing what we need to do when we need to do it. But we, by adopting other people's answers, really doesn't work.
No, it does not. We need to make them our own.
Exactly.
In my conversation with Bruce Lipton many months ago, we were talking about the evolution of man, and the comment was made as to what that would be. He said that the next evolution in humanity is community, in that, yes, we will still retain our individuality, but we will have a greater sense of our role, our part, and our importance in the community in which we live. It may not be the community of 7 billion. It may only be 7 or 70 or 12. Who knows?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because Solomon talks a lot about that, actually. And, you know, what he says, you know, our growth lies in our interaction, not in our isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the growth is in interaction with people. With that, not, and that means you have to sort of suspend a little bit. We've already, and I think he says it somewhere else, we already know, you know, that how unique we are. What we have to start putting our energy in is how much in common we have.
Right, to learn.
In our commonality.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Eric.
I'm saying, correct, to learn compassion is part of what Solomon speaks about, to stop looking for what makes each and every one of us distinct, unique, and different. Because, of course, this, you know, leads to feelings of separation, who's better than who, which religion is right, which people is better, conflict, ultimately war. But when we, if we really want to challenge ourselves to grow, maybe 2013 is the year for us to start saying, here's my challenge that I accept. I am going to start to look at what makes each and every one of us the same. As we began talking about earlier in the conversation, when sometimes people respond a certain way and we don't like it, if we could start saying, wait a minute, who is that child? Can I see the child that I was and the child that this person was and how we would play? What makes us the same? Can we recognize that when one child cries in one part of the world, 100 children cry in another, when one child laughs, 1,000 children laugh, that we are that connected? Can we see ourselves in others? And it's just like every ray of the sun that shows up here on the planet is an individual ray, but it each contains the hologram, the complete hologram of the sun itself. Each ray of the sun is a perfect and full expression of the sun itself, that if we can start to view ourselves as individual rays of the consciousness of God, love, and the universe, experiencing life here on this planet, we can start to discover and recognize that we each contain the hologram of God, love, and the universe here. And if we each contain the full hologram, then each and every one of us are God, then we are all one and the same again. And this is us reconnecting in our consciousness. We have never really disconnected. It's been in the way we've chosen to view ourselves. We view ourselves here as individuals to learn that we are all one, but our lessons come through first appearing to be separate and distinct and then discovering that we are all one and the same.
Yeah, and along on that same line, I mean, Solomon talks about, you know, every individual that you meet is really a part of you that you're meeting. Talking about that separateness, you know, and he even says, you know, doing harm to another person is really an act of self-flagellation. you know, that it you're hurting yourself.
Yeah. Well,
because they're an expression of yourself.
Yeah.
That, you know, and being all connected is, you know, something that we have to work toward. I don't think it happens overnight. But I think it's a great place to start, whether or not you understand the concept right away. But it's a great idea just to look at a person and go, well, there's a somewhat of a reflection of who I am, you know.
Yeah.
And not to immediately judge, not to immediately, you know, go, oh, you know, I'm so much more intelligent than this person, or, you know. I mean, truthfully, I mean.
I agree with you.
On some level, you know, a bum on the street could really have the answer to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But we would never recognize it.
Well, it takes
because it's not packaged the way we think it's
right,
packaged.
Exactly. Well, it reminds me of something that was said in a book that came out, I'm going to say 10 or 15 years ago, James Redfield's The Celestine Prophecy, where he talks about how we're all carrying messages for one another. And that we do ourselves and others a disservice by not sharing that message and in turn not receiving that message, because each person has another piece of that puzzle we're trying to put together. And I use a Star Trek analogy that when we put our shields up, nothing goes in or out except weapons, you know, kind of thing, and destruction. And so we need to put the shields down. As you folks have already said, you gentlemen have already said, and Solomon says, become vulnerable and say, you know,
yeah,
what?
And there's power in that.
Absolutely.
There is real power to be gained in being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Not that you have to gain power, but you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. No, that's always been an interesting, I'm going to say, dichotomy when you talk about power, because a lot of people, because of their mindset, they think of this power and, quote, and hand in hand, power and control. Well, what is there to control? I don't have any control anyway. But what it does is it puts me into a position where I'm open to the universe and its guiding. And that's also another interesting aspect as well, where it doesn't do a whole lot of good to say, I'm going to listen to the still small voice inside, period, end of statement. Well, what good is that if you're not going to follow the promptings? Because that's what they're there for, to guide you.
Mm-hmm. Well, when we unveil our soul, it often feels unsafe to us. It's the most vulnerable that we become, not vulnerable in the way of meaning that we are in danger, but vulnerable meaning being open, sharing mm-hmm. our heart and our essence. And it can feel frightening. We tend to protect that part of our soul because of the fear base around it. But we're really here to discover that light is nothing to be afraid of, because
right.
the reality is darkness doesn't exist. If it could, we could sweep it up, put it into a paper bag, and stick it out with the trash. That darkness is merely that place where we have not yet allowed ourselves to shine as the truth and the light that we really are.
Yeah.
That's what we're here to learn.
Is there, I'm going to venture, because when somebody begins the process of, and if I'm not using the right term, correct me, Frederick, when people begin the process of channeling these kinds of entities, if you will, and these messages, there is usually more than one book, if you will. Sometimes there's a volume, a series of expressions, if you will. Is there another one in the works of the writings?
Actually, funny you should bring that up. We're embarking on the second book even as we speak, you know, and it's culled from sessions that I've done over the years. And it's so refreshing to read over that material. It mm-hmm. just is. So, yes, and the answer to that, yes, there is another book.
And we can look forward to that. I want to let our listeners know quickly here before we get to the rest of our program here that the website for you, if you would like to check out Solomon Speaks, is the website SolomonSpeaks and put a .com after it. It's that simple. You can find out more about Dr. Eric Pearl at TheReconnection.com. You can find out more about Frederick Ponslov at Fred Ponslov. That's F-R-E-D-P-O-N-Z-L-O-V www.thebestofyourself.com. And again, it's all surrounding this wonderful work about reconnecting your life, Solomon Speaks. When we get together, and I absolutely have to tell you that you brought to mind in the last portion of our conversation here, the thought that one of the places that I find the greatest, I'll say, peace, happiness, if you will, as well as exuberance, though I can't actually live there, I mean, you know, thrive and stay alive, but is in these interviews, in these conversations with you two, with other guests that I have on the program. It's as if I wish I could just live here in this place.
Mm-hmm.
And do nothing else.
Yeah.
Because I really feel nurtured.
Yeah, you take this nurturing, you take this resonance, this vibration, this light with you, Richard, into your life, into your future interactions. I will bet you that somewhere inside of you, the next time someone seems to inappropriately respond to you in public, something inside of you will trigger from this conversation, and you will treat them or respond with a deeper level of your childlike love, and you will most likely bring about a different response, although it is not the response that you bring about that matters, because that's up to them. It's the process that you allow yourself to experience of your own interpretation.
Now, you said something right there that I want to key on. It's also a biblical passage, and I'm sure Solomon has spoken about this in the work that we are discussing here, and that is the child. Jesus is quoted as saying that unless you come to me as little children, not adults, not teenagers, but little children, that childlike quality of the heart, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven, or whatever interpretation you wish to put in there. And that strikes me every time I think about that. I'm thinking, man, if I don't calm it down as a 53-year-old man, if I don't calm it down and get into that space that you just spoke of, Eric, I'm not going anywhere.
Well, Richard, I just want to throw something out here.
Sure.
You know, in terms of, and Eric, I hope you come in right away, is that, you know, that this concept of, we're eternal.
Mm-hmm.
We're eternal.
Sure, sure.
You know, and we're constantly working things over and over. There's no end game.
Right.
It's all process.
And I agree.
You know, so in terms of, you know, if I can only get to heaven. Well, a lot of that's fear. It creates like a fear base.
Right.
And what it does is it makes you, oh, if I don't do this, I'll be punished. No. I mean, it's all about learning and developing and honoring that development you make.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I don't do this, I'll never get into Disneyland. You know, it's not what I'm saying that heaven is.
But, sure.
Well, for some people, Disneyland. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, that it is, you know.
And, of course, my focus is on the childlike quality. That's really not so much getting into heaven as much as it is be as a little child. It
Eric,
works so much better.
Well, actually, I've forgotten because I've enjoyed what you just said. But, Richard, I don't think there's anything you need to change. We are all here progressing the way we want to. We have to realize that, you know, everyone says there's only one Bible, and they forget to tack on all 26 interpretations of it.
Right.
So, you know, there is human interpretation, and your interpretation of it is just as valuable as any one of the 26 that have gone into print. I might suggest something. I want to tell you that I understand what you were saying earlier when you said you warn people when they listen to the information they might not want, and it might change their lives in a way that they don't want to. But and I know what the thought in that is, but if you drop down from the thought in the brain to the feeling in the gut, when that message is heard, the feeling in the gut tends to be one of trepidation or fear to a certain bit. And I think that message has served you in the purpose, but maybe your own growth is in letting go of that message and allowing people to make their own choices to listen without the caveat, without the warning that might bring them into listening with a little bit of fear or a little bit of putting off. Because as children, our instinct would be to simply share our message, and maybe your communication would be more childlike. Just as Fred went into his childlike choosing to share, he left from the adult worrying about, should I edit this, mm-hmm. into the childlike sharing of it. And maybe it's time for you, too, to trust that you have, over the years, deliver such great insight and messages, and maybe it's time to remove the warning label. I don't think anyone has yet died from the information that you have brought through.
Point taken.
I agree. I hear 100%.
I absolutely hear what you're saying. Point taken. And
well, the thing is also, you could have the most loving message that you could put out there of pure love, and there may be somebody out there who is just going to interpret it in the way they're going to interpret it.
Right.
And you really have no control over that.
Yeah.
You could compliment me, and I could choose to feel complimented. I could choose to feel insulted.
Right.
You could say to someone, oh, my, look how much you've evolved and grown. You're doing such a wonderful job of communicating from your heart or doing this and that.
You mean I wasn't before?
That's right. You could choose to take that as an insult, saying, you talking down to me, saying that you didn't like who I was before. Or you could choose to take that as a compliment. Thank you for noticing and observing my growth and evolution, because this is what I am here for.
Hmm. Well, I want to thank you, Eric, for sharing what you did in that regard. And before I let both of you go, I have only a few questions left. And here's how I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask three questions, and Frederick, you're going to answer first, and then Eric, you will follow with your response to the question.
Okay. Oh, my God.
And the first question is, and I'll put it in this context, Frederick, who is Frederick Punzlov?
Still a work in progress. You know, I'm still discovering, and I will to the day I die.
And Eric, who is Eric Pearl?
Who is Eric Pearl? That's a good question. I think you'll have to ask my mother, but let me think. I'm someone who is searching to be more, Godlike, more the light, to learn to observe without judgment and to see how far I can evolve and grow during this lifetime and contribute to myself as spirit. And I'm also looking forward to seeing who I become on the other side, and who I become if I come back and I take this journey one more time. Can I be even that much more and that much better?
Frederick, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing right now?
I am such a supporter of empowering people to be who they are, to take responsibility for what they do, and to know that they can change their lives into anything they wanted to. And that's Solomon's main message, and that's where I believe we have a chance to really accomplish something really amazing. And not be victims. We have a world full of victims. And I think we have to be victors by taking responsibility and knowing that we can change anything.
Eric, same question to you.
Can you just repeat it for me?
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want to leave something behind that allows people to grow and expand so that they can leave greater and greater gifts behind and that the cycle continues. I believe if we leave this world unchanged, we haven't done what we've come here to do. We've come here to bring about a change for the betterment of everyone and the evolution of life and consciousness.
And to Frederick, how powerful.
This is the third question.
This is it. This is the third question. No more surprises in that regard. How powerful are we as human beings?
Oh, totally. Totally. We have the power of the universe in us, every single one of us. And that is, that recognition is what really needs to be assimilated. We have the power. One person can change, you know, a nation, a Gandhi. Take a Gandhi, for instance. You know, changed a world. And everyone has the same power as he has. Everyone has. We just have to recognize him.
And Eric,
yeah, he may be Gandhi, but he's not forgotten.
I couldn't wait.
And Eric, how powerful are we?
I don't know that I can better express that than Fred just did. We are the entirety. We create, we manifest everything in our lives. And Fred said it so much better. I don't really want to alter and change that.
Okay.
I want to tell you, you know that from my experience with Reconnective Healing, my life has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to work in a small little chiropractic office, and I just saw my patients chiropractically. Then the healings came about, and I facilitated that. And now, as you know, I teach people. I've taught over close to 100,000 people around the world how to do reconnective healings. But what we're really, really, really most excited about right now is this new work that's coming through that Fred and I are going to share, as we said, for the first time since the book is out live on Saturday, June 29th at the Hilton in Universal City in Los Angeles. And we're hoping as many people will be there as possible. And we're also hoping, if we're able to organize this correctly and it feels good to everyone, that we're going to make it accessible to people from around the country by streaming it live.
Fantastic. You guys are awesome. I wish you were in studio. I'd give a hugs to both of you. This has been a great hour together, and I thank you so much for taking the time and sharing Solomon Speaks on reconnecting your lives. Dr. Eric Pearl and Frederick Punzlaw, thank you again, both of you, for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm
Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time. Love to Lal.